I encourage every physician to get into real estate because for the most part, we make a pretty healthy income and we can afford it. But if you really love medicine, you don't want to give that up. Awesome. Because real estate can help you create the practice that you want to, where you can pursue your passion and you'll take better care of your patients because you are pursuing that passion.
Welcome to Surgeon Syndicate. If you're paying attention, you know that you only make money when you work. It might be great money, but it's dependent on you. The information on this podcast will help you solve that. We interview experts and provide analysis into financial freedom through commercial real estate. Why? To help physicians like you thrive. Let's dive in.
Welcome to Surgeon Syndicate. This is your host, Dr. Michael McManus. And we are here today with Dr. Daniel Ward, who is a facial plastic surgeon, an entrepreneur, and a life coach in Salt Lake City, Utah. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to chat with you and share something that's a passion for both of us.
All right. So Daniel has over 14 years of surgical experience after residency. He's a tenured associate professor at the University of Utah School of Medicine and in private practice in Salt Lake City. He's also the founder of Derm Spa, a medical grade skincare company and a real estate fund. His primary practice focuses on rhinoplasty, revision rhinoplasties, facelift, neck lift, eyelid rejuvenation, and hair restoration, as well as the non-surgical practice on natural transformative results that do not require incisions. He's been an innovator both surgically and in his businesses and serves on the advisory board of multiple companies. And we can get back into some of that as we go. Daniel, thank you for being here and welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
All right. So we were just talking before we started recording here about who listens to the show. And we're mostly aiming to educate doctors. But I was just thinking after I went through that, we do have some listeners who aren't doctors. But really, that's where we kind of go back to focus on trying to educate doctors about commercial real estate and its advantages. So tell us a little bit more about your real estate journey.
Well, yes. So my real estate journey really started, and I'm going to talk a lot about we in this because my wife, Janie, has been integral into that. She is the true entrepreneur. Whatever entrepreneurship that I have has been brought out because of her. And it's interesting, we kind of go back and forth where she sometimes fuels it. I sometimes feel it. We go back and forth. One kind of little funny thing that I like to talk about is she went through this Dave Ramsey stage, which is me pushing. So she's like, all like, no, we can't buy anything, no debt, like all this stuff. So we were kind of disagreeing about that and contending, but it was kind of fun to go through this process. So I'll talk a lot about we, because she really was the one that helped me learn to take the leap. And now I'm like crazy about it. So our first real estate venture was only about 7 years ago, besides our primary residence. That was our first real estate venture. Although, as I say that, I thought of one thing. My wife, actually, we ended up selling our house, moving to a place like 5 miles away. And she created some deal like doing seller financing where she got rent for like 3 years and then sold it at like a guaranteed minimum price. These people couldn't get a mortgage for whatever reason. So she really kind of used that leverage. And Naval Revocant really talks about leverage. And it's not like she's using leverage in a way that hurt the other person. In fact, she was actually serving them by giving them an opportunity that somebody else wouldn't. But that service came at a price. And that price was really beneficial to us, because we were able to get the rent for a while. We were able to get eventually the money from the sale of the home. And we did it within 3 years. So we were able to not pay any tax, capital gains tax on it. So that was really cool. Our first true investment property, though, was a little house, a little duplex, like 100 years old. Nothing sexy, nothing dramatic. It was just an awesome investment. That was like 150K. And the cap rate has been about 8 or 9%. So it's not like some staggering cap rate on this residential property that is all super sexy or whatever, but it's just been there and it's been solid. And the real cool thing about this property, and this has happened so often in real estate, is that you find these little gems that make it even more valuable for you. So in this case, a renter who'd been there for 12 years. And when he heard there was a sale, he was freaked out that he was going to get kicked out. The rents were kind of artificially low, so we needed to raise the rent a little bit. But this guy has been the biggest blessing for us, because turns out he's a plumber and he works at Home Depot. And so he's been like our handyman the whole time. And he's like, hey, I spent $3.82 on this, so I'm going to take it off rent, or I did this. And those little things in real estate can be so fun. And that's been a cool experience for us. So that was our first property.
That's great. That's funny. You talk about a duplex. I think the first house my wife and I bought together was a half a duplex in Danville, Pennsylvania, which is like the heart of old coal country. And the building was standing on the original when the city records were put together. So there was no record of its build date. And then I met somebody in the office whose grandparents had lived there, and her grandparents didn't know how old it was. So it didn't look like it was colonial, but it sure started to seem like it was. And you said yours was 100 years old. I was like, wait, I had one of those. So you went from that first duplex, and what led you to kind of continue down this road and do more?
Well, so, I mean, we kind of thought, this is cool. We're just getting some money coming in for very little work. I think one thing that is important for physicians or other professionals to know about real estate is it's not passive. It's minimally active in some cases, but there's always some work. I think a lot of people get scared, especially for residential real estate. And that's probably, you know, why a lot of us choose to venture down the commercial path is because we get afraid of like toilets and tenants with residential. And that's true. But there's ways around that. But that was our first. And then we kind of dabbled. Our next property was kind of a passion project. I wouldn't say that it was necessarily a brilliant financial decision, but we bought a vacation property at Sundance Resort. And that was pretty fun. It was also a duplex. We could rent out the basement to a long-term tenant. And then we did short-term rental for the upper unit. But it's really just kind of fun for us. Like, I think short-term rentals can be very seductive in the sense that they look so good. Like, oh my gosh, like I stayed at this Airbnb in Hawaii or whatever, and they charged me $7,800. Like, wouldn't it be cool? Like, and then people do like these back of the envelope calculations. Like, I can make all this money. Well, yeah, but there's an HOA fee. If you have a mortgage on it, that's going to add up. There's always repairs. There's always something that happens. And also, if you buy a vacation property, oftentimes it's you buy it for you. Like, you want to do it for your family. It's like your house almost. And so when somebody comes in and they, I don't know, get the curtains dirty or break a chair, it kind of feels personal to you. So I would just be very careful with Airbnb and stuff because it's kind of fun. But I would say, like, only do it if it's kind of a passion project for you, because I just don't think those are necessarily going to be really good, safe money makers, as opposed to like a larger occupancy residential or a commercial property. And I really think commercial is preferable if you can get into that in any way. But then from there, we just kind of kept building. We typically just bootstrapped with our own funding, getting our own mortgages or paying for it with cash, different properties. And then we're also creative. I think that so often people in medicine, we aren't very creative with how we think about doing these things. So for example, we bought an apartment complex in this small town in Wyoming. It's a cool place because they're actually going to build a new nuclear power plant right by it. So it's kind of an up and coming place. But the seller was a little bit distressed, not distressed financially necessarily, that the seller had purchased it from, inherited it from his father who passed away. And this guy, he lived in town, it was pretty easy to manage, but he just didn't want to do it. So he wanted to sell it. He wanted some big payout, but he had kind of run them into the ground. Like, there weren't even like rent contracts with the different tenants. So we did a little bit of cleanup, invested a little bit of capital into it to get new carpet, new flooring, that sort of thing. And then the main thing was just like administrative cleanup, getting people on contracts, making sure that the rent payment was automated. But the really cool thing is that we got this landlord. He was totally happy to do seller financing. And seller financing is something that I think a lot of physicians, well, a lot of people in real estate don't know about, but it's something that's really common. It's really common now with interest rates being so high. Yeah. But before that, like, you can find deals with seller financing, but it's not easy. It's not like every other deal you find. You have to work to find those deals, but they are out there.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. And right now, I've seen a few. I haven't closed one, but I know a couple of people that have, that there are some of the aging baby boomer era, and they like the income stream, but they don't want to manage it anymore. And when approached with seller financing, they love the idea. Like, hey, look, you can still have an income stream from this. You got a first place at the seat. If we don't make our payments, you can just take it back. And it hasn't been as hard of a sell as one might think, that sometimes when people are exiting, they need the cash and it's different, but sometimes they're just done running it.
Right. So. And again, I'm a big believer that, I guess maybe I'm just like a pure capitalist or something, but like, I really believe that the economics is to serve each other. If I purchase a house from someone and they sell it to me, like, we are serving each other in that. And oftentimes, even if a seller doesn't know that they're interested in seller financing, by kind of giving them a little bit more information, they might be. So for example, let's say, like, I love that example you gave about like an aging baby boomer. Like, they might have like a pretty good W-2 income, say. So they're getting taxed pretty high. they might really love the idea of seller financing because they don't have some gigantic capital gains tax bill. If it's an investment property, for example, or if they're not going to 1031 it. So there can be some real ways that you can add some value. And I've found that we are more successful if we look for ways that, of course, we are going to be served from a selfish standpoint, but how can we serve the other party? And so kind of like changing your mindset a little bit, like, oh, how can I help them? Not that you're going to make some stupid decision, like overpay for something or whatever, but no, how can I really serve them? And that helps kind of find other opportunities that you might miss.
That's so true. I don't know, when you were talking about the seller financing, I had this memory of a friend of mine who I knew right after college. And this was like in Nederland, Colorado, 30 years ago. I haven't been to Nederland in a long time. And I think now it's kind of become a fancy bedroom community. But back then, I mean, it was like old hippies that still had a hideout in the foothills above the Front Range of Colorado. And this buddy of mine was young and he didn't have a lot of credit or things that would impress banks. And there were a lot of, I mean, like cabins in the woods that were not fancy properties. And a lot of times the bank wouldn't lend on them. So he would find sellers who would owner finance because nobody could, often banks had turned down deals they had multiple times, and he'd get them to owner finance it. And then he'd fix it up a little bit and find a tenant who had a worse credit record than him. And he'd put them in on his owner financing. And then they'd live there for like 3 years. So they had a credit history and he'd fix it up enough that the bank would lend on it. Yes. And then he would sell it to them and he got to be the landlord and make the profits off of the whole thing. And really all he did was provide this service to link a property owner who had an unsellable building with somebody needed a place to live and was an uncredit worthy borrower. And he became the guy in the middle who really had no cash himself. He just put the whole thing together. So it's a great story. A lot of ways you could look at that and go, well, maybe somebody was paying a higher rate or this or that, and you could call it usury or whatever. But in the end, he got everybody what they needed and he made a little money in the middle. So it was a pretty cool story.
Totally. I mean, my mindset really shifted when I started to think, how are we serving each other in this deal? How am I helping them? How are they helping me? It helped me, I think, make better decisions for myself, because anybody who's been in real estate has probably been part of like that blood in the water shark frenzy. Like, oh my gosh, I got to buy this property. I got to take this over or do whatever. And that's an uncomfortable feeling. You can sometimes lead yourself down a path of finding or going down towards a deal that isn't really good. So if you're thinking like, wait, how does this deal serve me? How can I serve them? It's kind of like, for me anyway, it's about mindset, I guess. That gets me in the correct mindset where I can be better able to make good decisions. But I just wanted to go back just really quickly, not to reiterate the point too much, but what you talked about with your friend in Colorado with those helping non-credit worthy people, that's exactly what my wife did with our residential home that we purchased and then sold to these people. And they are so grateful. And my wife is not like, she's a real estate agent now. She's got her license and stuff. But at that time, it was very important for us that she stayed home to raise our kids. Our youngest is now 17. She just figured this out based on common sense. Like, she just thought it through and then she used like Rocket Lawyer or something like that to come up with a contract. And now with like ChatGPT and all these AI things, coming up with these contracts like that can be really easy. So I'm not necessarily telling you to forget lawyers, because lawyers are very important, but you can kind of come up with like a base sort of thing and save you a lot of time by using your resources like Rocket Lawyer or some sort of AI product to come up with something like a seller financing thing. And you can talk about that with the seller back and forth, or the buyer, whatever it is. And then if you need an attorney to review it, you can, but you don't have to have like an MBA and have all this experience to be able to find deals. The reason I want to emphasize that point is I think those of us who chose medicine, we chose it. Who knows if medicine made us this way or if we self-select into it, but we're kind of rule followers in general. Like, we like to be compliant. We like safety. We're conservative. We don't start practicing if we're not board certified. I mean, all these sorts of things. We just do things kind of by the books. And I'm not saying that you should do something not by the books in real estate, but it's just a lot more open and you have the opportunity to be more creative. And it goes kind of against the grain for what a lot of us in medicine, how we think.
Yeah, it's interesting because I had this thought the other day where I was thinking about that with a lot of docs when, yeah, they have a hard time doing what's outside of the box. And looking at real estate, I've had some interesting interactions where they're sure we're doing something illegal or weird just because the returns are more than you make on a savings account. But I was thinking about it from a surgeon perspective. When you're operating, nobody's anatomy is the same. And you come up with creative solutions all the time. And I think it's part of years of experience where it comes down to outcomes based on total number of cases you've done. Is because after you've done 1,000 cases or whatever, you come up with solutions more intuitively, I think, when you're operating. Like when you see something like, I've never seen this before, is always a hard part in operation. But if you've seen something similar to it, and when you get a bunch of cases, but you come up with creative solutions that make it work. I think that's part of why, like, we're residents and early on, you end up being a slow surgeon because everything is a much more detailed process, but that creativity flows later on. But you're right, when it comes to the rules and how we interact with the rest of the world outside of that little operative field, it can be hard to not have a playbook where this is what you should do. We'll get back to our show in a minute, but first I want to offer you an opportunity to accelerate your learning. My life changed and my ability to start becoming work optional changed when I gained the people and the knowledge to start investing in commercial real estate. One of the key people there was Ash Patel, and joining his Invest Beyond Multifamily Mastermind. With that, I had the people and the knowledge. Well, that mastermind is no longer open, but for a fraction of the price, Ash has now made a course, and this is probably the most valuable set of information, the quickest way to move along your learning curve. So if you are interested in actively investing in commercial real estate and retail and industrial and office, I would recommend this course to you. We're going to include a pre-sale link both in the show notes. It'll also be on the surgeonsyndicate.com website. And in your checkout, we'll save you another 1%. I know it's not a lot, but every little bit helps if you use the discount code MIKE1487. So take that step now and move your future forward. If you're not interested in investing actively, give us a call here at Fortress Capital and let's talk about what your goals are as a passive investor. But it's time to stop listening, start acting, and let's move your future forward.
Right, especially for people like us whose personalities naturally are that way or we've been trained to be that way. It's hard to shift gears. Like I think in medicine, of course, we should be that way. We should follow evidence-based guidelines. We should do what's right for our patients because their health, their life may depend on it. But with real estate, I'm not suggesting you come out with like gun shooting and you're like all crazy. I mean, follow the rules, but also know that it's not as well established. In medicine, I like what you were saying about how later on in your career, you're able to kind of find more creative solutions because you just have that experience. And it reminds me of like when you're a resident, like you're a second year resident and the most bread and butter problem of your specialty seems super stressful and scary. And then the next year, it's a little bit easier. The year after that, by the time you're into your residency, it's like that's the simplest problem ever to take care of. So you gain some familiarity. The thing with medicine, though, is that we have this very structured life where it's like, okay, you're a PGY1, PGY2, PGY3. You go through this process and each year you do it. With real estate, you just don't have that. You know, it's not like, okay, I do 10 houses, I do 20 doors, I do this. And now all of a sudden I'm a PGY4 in real estate or whatever. It just takes time and experience. I guess I'm just saying like, I really, really feel passionately that real estate and entrepreneurship in general can be such a beautiful thing for physicians. And I'm really passionate about physician burnout and about how medicine is suffering. The people who practice medicine are suffering. And it is the most amazing career in the world. It's still the thing I'm most proud of. I'm proud of my physician. I, like you, I don't practice full time anymore because I do other things, but it's still something that I really love to do. And I love taking care of people. But on the other hand, like so many of the things associated with burnout and things like that, we're not going to fix it. We're not going to be able to get rid of EMRs all of a sudden to make our life better. They're here to stay. We're not going to get rid of insurance companies. Like, I mean, we can dream, but what can we do? There's some things we could do like, well, you know what? You don't have to take that crappy insurance anymore. You can just do a cash pay practice if you want to. And real estate really can allow you some of that financial freedom where you can do that and kind of create the practice that you want. So if you love medicine, I encourage every physician to get into real estate because for the most part, we make a pretty healthy income and we can afford it. But if you really love medicine, you don't want to give that up. Awesome. Because you know what? Real estate can help you create the practice that you want to, where you can pursue your passion and you'll take better care of your patients because you are pursuing that passion.
I went through burnout as part of how I ended up here. And once you have, I don't know, it is a freedom. I refer to it as work optional, where it doesn't have to provide a whole income stream. Or I remember when I was trying to figure numbers, like how much money I had to put in my retirement bucket to be done. And it was this push between, man, I'm tired of this, but my bucket's not filling up fast enough. So I want to work harder to fill it faster, or do I want to work less and work longer? And it wasn't until I found something that it's a multiplier effect. It's the leverage, like you said, of real estate, that you can put work into it and it gives returns. And the work you put into it keeps giving returns. You don't have to bill another office visit for it to keep paying. And that's pretty cool. And that does, once it takes the stress off and you're like, I can be here if I want to be or not want to be. And it changes the practice of medicine. And I think it's a huge thing that could alleviate burnout if you don't feel like you're trapped there. Being trapped is a tough thing.
For sure. We could get all sorts of philosophical about this, but I think there's a really big switch that happens when you suddenly in medicine realize that it truly is a business. I know it's a calling. I know all the moralistic things. I get all that. And I feel the same way. But at the end of the day, you're exchanging a service for a service. And that's what we do. Like when we were first trading a rock for a stick, when we were cavemen or whatever, like that's what we were doing, is trading a service one for another. As soon as you kind of realize that and kind of get comfortable with the fact, I think so many of us in medicine are uncomfortable with money, that it seems so dirty to like, oh, I don't want to do this for money. I'm not going to charge you for this. Like, number one, who are you to make financial judgments for your patient? That's kind of paternalistic. You probably shouldn't do that. But also, as soon as you realize that, it's really liberating, because you can kind of pursue what I really think you should, which is your passion. And for so many of us, our passion is serving our patients. We want our patients to be happy, and we want to do that. Real estate offers you a really cool way to do that. I mean, for me, for example, I really love, with what I do as a facial plastic surgeon, I love to do facial reconstruction, you know, like little skin cancers when somebody's missing half their nose, trying to rebuild that. If they've got facial paralysis from a tumor or something, like trying to get their smile back or their eye to close properly, whatever. Oftentimes those patients aren't terribly wealthy. And oftentimes, I mean, I can waive my fee, but the OR may not waive their fee, or the anesthesiology group may not be able to waive their fee. So how do we help them? Well, by being in a financially good position, I can take care of those patients. We have a foundation, but our policy is if anybody comes in with skin cancer defect or facial paralysis, we see them without charge. Of course, if they do have insurance, we want to charge them. If they can pay, we try to have them pay, but it's a passion of mine. So I'm able to actually, I think, be more altruistic and help more people by taking care of the financial bottom line, which real estate has really helped with that, than I would otherwise be able to do.
That's awesome. And so you have your other business, your med spa, which is an interesting thing, because as I've gone down this road and started looking at, okay, the idea of having multiple income streams, because that, again, takes more of the pressure off. If you're like, well, what happens if the real estate thing dries up or whatever? And then my question is, and then I'm stuck back and going to work every day. And the thing about a med spa is you already understand the business of medicine. And often there's opportunities there where it's an extension of kind of what you do already, but it's not covered by insurance, but people still want to pay for it. Was that part of your journey in opening that business?
I mean, my initial inclination for that was, there's a little bit about my path. I did my residency and fellowship at the University of Michigan. And then I took a faculty position at the University of Utah and was there employed for about 6 years. I'm still there. I'm still like a tenured associate adjunct faculty member or whatever, but I'm no longer employed. And what I realized when I was at the university, we had some non-surgical services that our department would offer, but I would have patients who I'd been seeing for like rhinoplasty or Botox or whatever, who weren't seeing the estheticians that worked for the university. They were going to some med spa down the road. So my initial thing was like, I want to capture this revenue stream. Why am I letting it spill out? They come and see us every 3 months for their Botox or Dysport or whatever. Why do they come see us for laser hair removal too? And so part of it was just to kind of capture that revenue stream. Was like, this is a captive audience. I should take advantage of them. But also, as you know, in medicine, like any other industry, when the business is built upon one person, when that person is the business, you don't have a business. And there's a key distinction in my mind between being self-employed and owning a business. If you're self-employed, I can be a surgeon in practice. I've got 5 staff members and I can make a ton of money. And it can support a beautiful, glorious lifestyle. I can go on fancy vacations. I can do whatever. But I turn 65 or 75 or 55 whenever I want to retire. I leave the practice the business is gone because I am the business. Versus if I've got some other revenue streams going, then that's something I can actually sell to someone. Because when I leave, I can sell that and the business can still run and go. So Tony Robbins also likes to say that if you, like whenever you start a business, you should always have an exit plan in mind. Like you have your business plan, but you should also have your exit plan. And I don't know if I have my full exit plan lined up, but knowing that there is a plan and the plan is to sell it for something. I mean, maybe it's for $2. I don't know. Hopefully it's like for $2 billion. I don't know, whatever it is. But part of the plan is having revenue streams. And going back to real estate for a second, I think if you look at people who were wealthy in today's society in years, decades, centuries past, it is not the professionals. It's not the physicians. It's not the lawyers. Yes, we make a healthy income. I'm not complaining about our income. It's business people. Business people, that's how you can kind of optimize your lifestyle. And a big shift for me was when I realized that as a physician, I was striving so hard for financial freedom. Like you mentioned earlier, like billing that extra visit or making sure we get the surgery added on, or we're going to try to get it done on Friday night when everybody else wants to go home, whatever. I realized I was pursuing financial freedom, but there's four other freedoms that we all go for. You know, I tell this to my coaching clients. It's like, we want financial freedom, of course, but we want time freedom. We want geographic freedom. We want relationship freedom where we can pursue whatever relationships. I'm not talking about like romantic relationships, friendships, business relationships, whatever. And then we also want the ability to kind of pursue whatever we want. We want that freedom. And for so many in medicine, we get stuck so focused on the financial freedom that we forget about time. We forget about geography. And that is so important. Again, going back to the burnout thing, it's so important, I think.
Yeah, you start feeling stuck. And the other businesses, I mean, because what type of business it is, it's a similar thing. Is because I've been looking for industrial properties in Green Bay, and we keep seeing for a month, I think it was like November, the theme of the month, but looked like great flex properties. And they were auto shops, but they had office space, they had an industrial space. And there was an aging mechanic who had run the shop. It had been a great business. They cut back because they didn't want to work as hard. And then they decided to sell the business. They wanted to sell the building and the business. And they have this idea of what the business is worth, but they can't sell it because they are the business. They never hired other mechanics. They didn't hire a manager where they could walk away and the business still made money. That's a business that somebody will buy because they're buying that future revenue. Right. And that became, I wanted to start like this, put a billboard up or something that's like, are you aging and have a business you want to sell? Don't slow down. Sprint to the finish.
Don't give up now. Now's not the time.
Yeah, make it big. Build systems. All right, so that's awesome. So there in the financial frame, so real estate's part of it, but owning a business could be part of it. So this has been great. What I'm going to do is we're going to wrap up this part of the show. Dr. Ward is going to be back for the second half of our interview and the next episode. If you've enjoyed this and you found value, please join us for the second half of this interview. And again, please, wherever you're listening to us, stop, give us a review, give us some feedback. Those reviews help people find the podcast and help spread the message. So thank you for joining us here on Surgeon Syndicate. We'll get back to our show in a minute, but first I want to offer you an opportunity to accelerate your learning. My life changed and my ability to start becoming work optional changed when I gained the people and the knowledge to start investing in commercial real estate. One of the key people there was Ash Patel and joining his Invest Beyond Multifamily Mastermind. With that, I had the people and the knowledge. Well, that mastermind is no longer open, but for a fraction of the price, Ash has now made a course. And this is probably the most valuable set of information and quickest way to move along your learning curve. So if you are interested in actively investing in commercial real estate and retail and industrial and office, I would recommend this course to you. We're going to include a pre-sale link both in the show notes. It'll also be on the surgeonsyndicate.com website. And in your checkout, we'll save you another 1%. I know it's not a lot, but every little bit helps if you use the discount code MIKE1487. So take that step now and move your future forward. If you're not interested in investing actively, give us a call here at Fortress Capital and let's talk about what your goals are as a passive investor. But it's time to stop listening, start acting, and let's move your future forward. This has been an episode of Surgeon Syndicate. If you found value in this episode, know other surgeons are hungry to become job optional. You can help them by sharing this content today. I also want to serve you better, so I want to offer you two things. Number one, I'll be able to give you the content in an even better way if you can take a moment and leave an honest review of the show explaining what you like and what you don't. Number two, if you are a surgeon and serious about this, you don't want to do this on your own because you don't want to make mistakes with your money, I'd be happy to help. Schedule a call and we can make a plan. Looking forward to having you with me on the next episode.